Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, yeah, no, I could do a phone sex bit if you want. I just thought you wouldn't be in the mood.
Hello and welcome to Still Watching, a weekly television podcast from Vanity Fair. I'm Richard Lawson.
And I'm Chris Murphy. We're here to discuss the fourth episode of the HBO series Succession, Honeymoon States.
Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, Pennsylvania.
The honeymoon states.
And later on, communications expert Risa Heller will be stopping by to talk about crisis communication as the Roys enter the post-Logan era.
But before we get to that, a quick recap. The opening of the show had us panic Googling amniocentesis as we found out Shiv is bringing a new Roy to the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great.
1 hour until the all-important board meeting to decide the interim CEO, and everyone has flocked to Logan's penthouse.
For some of us, it's a sad day, but for others, it's coronation demolition derby.
And drivers, start your engines. The old guard plotted in the China room and dashed Tom's dreams.
You're a clumsy interloper and no one trusts you. The only guy pulling for you is dead.
An undated amendment about Logan's final wishes raised questions of whether Kendall was the successor.
We don't know its status. And I mean, it doesn't hold any legal value, but we wanted you to know, but we wouldn't want it to feel more significant than it should.
The Roy kids came up with a plan that put Kendall and Roman temporarily in the top job.
We'll do the deal, spin ATN, fold in Pierce, 6 months, 8 months.
And that's all equal.
Yeah. Equal as fuck, to the gram.
And the corporate spin doctors worked out how exactly to frame Logan's final days with the company.
So it's Operation Shit on Dad.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yes, it is.
Meanwhile, Connor and Willa venture into Extreme Home Makeover Penthouse Edition as they make plans to move in.
Let's all move in. Grow old together, share a bed like Charlie and the Truck Factory.
All right, Chris, let's cover the most pressing question first. Underlined or crossed out?
Okay, I got to shout out my mom, who always told me growing up, and I never listened to her, that penmanship is so important. It's so important to have good handwriting, even in our digital age, you know.
Even if it's just a line.
Even if it's just a line, it's got to be clear. Yeah. And we're learning that really sort of deeply this episode. I'm 100%, it was 100% crossed out.
There's the line goes up.
It goes
in a way,
up.
Yeah.
It starts under, but it definitely goes up. And it feels to me that it's sort of clearly crossed out. And imagining who Logan Roy was, you know, sort of brash and not sort of taking a lot of time to be meticulous, I could see him just being like, boom, crossed out.
Yeah.
That's the end of Kendall.
Yeah.
But it is ambiguous enough that I do think Kendall, as he clearly does, has a lot of room to run with it all the way to the bank. So yeah. I think I'm saying it's crossed out. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's most likely. And like, Frank kind of figures out the timeline where he's like, we think it was about 4 years ago, but we don't know when he added these handwritten notes or crossed or things out or underlined things. I also think that, like, why would Logan underline it to be emphatic to himself?
Yeah, that doesn't make any like no sense. It makes no sense.
I mean, I guess, like, the point is that we're never going to know.
Yeah.
The point is the ambiguity, which leads to this kind of, like, polite-ish war of the wills in terms of who's going to step up, and everyone's trying to be diplomatic, and we just had this sort of emotional bonding moment the day prior where they hugged and everything, and they want to maintain that as long as possible. But I think, as we were talking about last week, I think this is a very tenuous reunion for the three siblings.
I mean, the reunion is sort of – it's actually – the reunion has already ended, basically, by the end of the episode.
Right.
It's two against one. And that's the thing that happens when you have three people, right, on a team. Two can team up and – ice out the other one. And of course that had to happen to my girl Shiv. Of course I pick her last episode, and of course Shiv is the one who gets pushed out of a power position by her brothers.
And I think that this episode, more than the show often does, got into the matter of Shiv being a woman.
Yes.
Where, you know, she's kind of speaks that a little bit when the brothers are kind of like, well, it should kind of be us. You never worked for the company. And she's like, I did that.
Am I too teary-eyed?
He's like, that was daddy, you know, make work. And yeah, exactly. Is my mascara going to run?
Mm-hmm.
That dynamic had to be introduced. I mean, it's been introduced in the past, but it had to be part of this conversation, obviously.
Totally.
Especially when, like, Jerry was maybe going to be interim CEO. The company has had all these problems, particularly with employees treating women terribly.
Mm-hmm.
Covers up about all that. So it was pertinent, certainly, in that regard alone. But then we also have the matter of Shiv being pregnant.
Well, that's I was about to say. It makes it sort of like 10 times grander in terms of her femininity, her womanhood.
Right.
She's literally with child, carrying Logan's grandchild. He has other grandchildren via Kendall, but the newest heir, you know, to the throne. And her femininity, her womanhood, effectively keeps her out of a power position in the company, which feels really unfair. Is it kind of fair when Kendall says you've never had a real position in the company and that she does sort of busy work? That is, I guess that's, you know, probably the strongest argument for keeping Shiv out, and he and Roman run with that. But she's proven herself to be, if not more competent than both of them. She's had real jobs before in the political sector. It felt like brothers teaming up on, you know, their little sister.
And, like,
know,
they had
their middle sister.
Like, they had their reasons. There was this unofficial will with Kendall's name involved in some point. There was the conversation with Roman, which, like, he has now kind of alluded to his siblings. Like, you know, I was closer to him than you guys realize. We talked more than you realize. So they do have their claims. I think Shiv does have a less her claim is more tenuous. Like, I think that that's reasonable given what we've seen on the show. But yeah, it's a complicated matter, all the more complicated because when she has the phone call with the doctor, she says, we'll be back in touch about your 20-week checkup. Mm-hmm. So I don't think she's obviously not at 20 weeks yet. But, like, that's, you know, close to halfway along.
Yeah, and considerable amount of time.
This is something that she can't hide, presumably, for much longer.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I have to wonder if the writers realized or noted in real life Sarah Snook is literally pregnant, and she's, you know, quite far along, and she revealed that at the Succession premiere. So I have to wonder a little bit cynically if this was an organic storyline or was this written in because this is a real thing that was happening with Sarah Snook, the actress. Either way, it's fantastic in terms of the storytelling and the arc of the show, because it complicates not only Shiv and her quest to, you know, run Waystar Royko, but also her relationship with Tom just gets so much more complicated than it already is.
And in classic Shiv fashion, she's really pushing him away in this episode.
When
you know?
She could use him. And he's trying to connect again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Look, Tom did not win the immunity challenge.
And he's about
back,
to get voted
he's
off
back
the
at
island.
Camp, and he is trying to go to every single person he can, trying to pry them open. He's going to Marsha, even, you know, trying to get in her good graces. Like, it's and just like, it's just everywhere.
He's not in anyone's alliance. Nobody wants to align with Tom in a really hilarious, visceral way. When Carl reads him for filth, when Carl drags him through the mud for being untrustworthy and Logan's little lackey, and now Logan is dead.
Yeah.
So Tom's greatest protector, which he knows, is gone. And nobody likes him. Nobody wants him on his team. Tom, if we're power ranking the winners and losers post Logan's death, Tom is rock bottom right now, I would say.
Yeah. And he put himself right there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, he made a ton of choices that brought him there over the past few seasons. He had this big kind of, you know, coup de grace at the end of last season. It worked for him for a little bit, but that was so contingent on Logan living forever, basically.
Yeah.
And clearly that didn't happen. So I'll be curious. And I'm not saying, you know, Shiv does not have to get close to Tom again just because presumably they're having a kid together.
No. She's got the resources to sort of care for this child on her own if she, you know.
But she is alone. And I think a big thing about her, maybe she's sort of advocating for herself to be interim CEO of however they're framing it, because she's like, in a few months' time, they would never consider me.
Yeah, no.
You know, and that's something that happens in the corporate world and, well, the working world in general, all the time. Pregnant women, oh, liability. I didn't get hired because I was pregnant or because I was going to get pregnant. You know, it's just like, I think that once in a while this show actually does reveal a little bit of what I assume are its internal politics in showing, like, that Shiv is in a really precarious position through no fault of all she did was get pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, yeah.
Sadly, it might be even sooner than a few months. It could be a few weeks when, you know, she really starts showing.
Yeah. And she does a lot of jacket buttoning in this episode, was good blocking. Yeah.
Which, speaking of blocking, when Shiv falls as she's walking, that was so, like, my heart literally, like, sunk, and also, like, at the same time was, like, caught in my throat because I was so nervous because of the baby, which nobody knows, right? To our knowledge, she hasn't told a single person that she's pregnant. She's just gotten iced out by her brothers, basically because she's a woman. And then in her anxiety after that, she trips and falls walking down the steps in these gorgeous little heels.
which the heels might be to blame.
They might be to blame, but it just sort of it was such a great example of Shiv, and I feel like I come back to this a lot, but it's really important in that, like, she tries to execute, she tries to be this sort of, like, grade A, top of the line, like, don't mess with me, businesswoman, and then she has, like, these foibles and these falls. She literally fell, and, like, she has fallen from the top consideration of the Waystar Royko throne, and that was shown in that blocking. I thought it was a really great, and it's a really convincing fall. I was, like, worried about her ankle, so great job, Sarah Snook.
Convincing enough that I was like, was that just, like, an accident on set that they kept in? I don't think that the show will be like, and then she miscarried. I don't think that would be too cruel a plotline even for this show. But I think that what is troubling Shiv and the rest of the kids is not only the fact that they have to hash this out among themselves, but that there's everyone else. There's Carl, there's Jerry, there's Hugo, there's Carolina. Everybody is sort of in this apartment that Connor is going to has spit shook with Marsha to buy for $63
million. Maybe the smartest thing he's ever done. I was like,
and so, you know, they're trying to have this board meeting kind of thing where they decide who's going to be CEO. But it's also awake.
Yeah. But
like,
it's
there
also
actually
awake.
Is like a component to this event that is supposed to just be about family, friends of family, and grieving.
Yeah.
And I think we get moments of that in this episode, but we just kind of continuously see a steady stream of vultures descending.
Oh, 1,000%.
We hear that Justin Kirk's character, Jared Mencken, is on his way. The Secret Service has the dog sniffing around. And then we also have the return of, is it Ron Petkus?
Oh, Stephen Root?
Yes, Stephen Root's character, who is this, you know, kind of noxious
conservative
guy who was in last season when they go to that sort of conservative retreat that is kind of supposed
CPAC,
to be like CPAC.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's, you know, pontificating about what a conservative lion Logan was, which, like, sure, the same will be said of Rupert Murdoch when he dies. And these are conservative people, one real, one fictional. But I think Logan was a cynical guy, you know, at most. Like he was mostly, as Connor puts it.
Can you believe this shit? He's trying to make Pop into a neoconservative. He wasn't a neocon. He was a paleo-libertarian. He was practically an anarcho-capitalist.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
If you like Benny Hill and Sinatra, does that make you one of those things?
He was what's ever best for Logan and whatever's going to make money for Logan and the Roy family. He wasn't some, like, you know, champion of conservative ideals more farther than what it could serve him, right?
He saw that money could be made there. And sure, like, there are jokes in this episode about his racism, about laughing when a hobo's on fire, juxtaposed to these loving obituaries that he's gotten that probably are in papers he owns, I think we're maybe meant to assume.
Yeah, I think so.
Probably PMG would be a little bit more circumspect.
Cynical, yeah, sort of, about his legacy.
But, like, everyone is just trying to remake Logan's legacy to suit their needs. And the kids are doing that too, saying a lot of, like, well, this is what dad would want.
Yeah, and it comes back down to the paper, right? It's like we're trying to remake Logan's legacy to serve whatever my agenda is, and we're going to try to interpret this paper to serve whatever my agenda is. You know, Shiv's like, obviously it was crossed out because that would serve her better. Yeah. Kendall's like, of course it was underlined because that's what's best for me and is in my best interest. And the beauty of having Logan, you know, not even be in a coma and not be able to wake up and be like, this is actually what I meant, is that it's completely dog-eat-dog. There's no answer. The answer is whatever, whoever is the savviest, the smartest, the shrewdest, makes the best moves, plays the best chess, that's who's going to win.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that for all of our predictions, we've never said Kendall is the one who was going to come out on top this season. And at the end of this episode, that seems to be what happens.
Well, yeah, I had said last week, and I swear to her, I had seen this episode already, but I swear I'd kind of forgotten most of what happened in it. So when I rewatched it for this recording, I was like, oh, I had said last week, oh, I think Kendall is going to become his father. Like, his father's ghost is going to possess him. And then you see this thing at the end.
That's what happens.
And he says to Hugo, he's like, dad would want this, you know, but you can't tell anyone. I'm not giving you any sort of protection. You will have to do this on your own in secret, but you have to do it.
Because
it's what dad would have done.
Hugo now owes him because Hugo, which is so funny, poor Juliet, you know, you know, doing some low-key insider trading, going to get everybody in trouble, selling the stock after she learns that Logan is dead via Hugo. Hugo goes to Ken. And that was also interesting to me because I'm going to copy a line that Logan said, I don't think of Kendall as a serious person. And yet for Hugo to pick up all the Roy children to be like, hey, Kendall, I need to tell you something and I need your help was sort of interesting to me. But Kendall, and I'm going to quote the 30 Rock episode about Reaganing, you know, when there's a 24-hour period where Jack Donaghy does like everything perfect and he answers every question right. Kendall was kind of Reaganing this episode.
Yeah. Even his emotional moment with Stewie. Which was what he needed to do to get that vote.
And it worked. And it worked. Literally
and
worked.
I don't think it was calculated exactly, but it was like, he was like, everything's in the past. We're old friends. Stewie makes fun of him for the PMG deal.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think that Kendall is really clicking in this episode, despite him still seeming very fraught.
Yeah.
Like, he's still kind
emotionally
of
emotionally fraught, yes. But I was like wondering, because he said he had like one therapy session at night with some guy, the best grief counselor, right?
I have a great grief guy, fuck you.
You're going to destroy this.
Can one session fix you? Can that fix somebody? Because he seemed a lot better than he's ever seen in certain ways this episode.
I think you juxtapose him to Roman, who is like, actually, I weirdly feel good. I think I like pre-grief.
Pre-grief.
Like and Kendall is really in it in the moment, and he's saying that, and we see him at the beginning of the episode looking really sad, and, you know. But I think that what we're watching maybe in this episode is Kendall processing it all and even shedding it. And by the end saying, okay, no more emotion. Now it's time to just like sully my father's legacy so we can have a smoother transition.
And so that I can remain at the top.
To push out my sister and, yes, make an uneasy alliance with Roman. But like how long is that going to last? Because no one ever took Roman seriously, even though maybe their father took him the most seriously, but they don't really believe that.
Yeah. I mean, Kendall was so great this episode. It's sort of like calibrating like when to play high status with Hugo and when to play low status. What I think worked with Stewie is that he was just like, I need your help. It was just a bald ask. Yeah. There was no sort of agenda. It was just, can you do me a solid?
It was like old college friends, you know, kind of that like bro stuff.
Yes,
like
Harvard bros, you know, just being like, can you do me a solid? And then at the end of the episode, whereas Roman, which again, we've talked about this before, and Roman sort of like emotionally abused a relationship with Logan, wanting to still protect him and lionize him. And like Carolina and Hugo gave a pretty clear playbook as to how they could probably shore up the most support and stay in a position of power. And Roman's not willing to do that because it would sully his father's name. And he said, never bring that to me again. He said, never again will we talk about this.
Right.
And that does not, to me, seem like a shrewd business move on Roman's part.
No.
And that's an emotional response to that situation when he needed to be potentially more rational.
Because presumably down the line, if Roman were to lead the company, there will be times when he has to say, Dad did this wrong, or I can do this better. You're going to have to tangle with his legacy at some point. And I mean, obviously, this is an extreme version of it, to make up lies about his, you know, well-being.
But were they lies?
Well, I guess that's also up for debate.
Yeah. I mean, there were lies that the kids were really involved, because the kids weren't speaking to him before. But, like, we were saying he seemed a little shakier than ever before recently.
I mean, speaking of shaky, we should talk about the non-Roy people who are involved in this. We have our Carls and our Jerrys.
And our Franks.
Carl, you know, as you mentioned, an unexpected bit of cruelty, which, like, he normally isn't that guy, I feel like. He's gotten some good lines in over the years, but, you know, everyone is feeling emboldened. Everyone is shunning Greg.
Yeah.
Tom can't be much above Greg. I think it was a good reminder when Carl says,
we're not going to let the little princes screw things up, right, Frank? If Jerry's going to block me, I want out. I want my fucking package. I am halfway in on a Greek island with my brother-in-law.
Say, what's up, boys?
Hi.
Oh, right. Frank, Jerry, Carl, Hugo, Carolina, all these people are fucking rich.
So unbelievably rich.
They're all going to be fine.
Like, they're all going to be fine. It's so crazy to think of. And I will say, I feel a little, like, silly for, because you think of them as a unit, right?
Yeah.
Under Logan, they were a unit combined to sort of keep Waystar Royko afloat, and also to sort of take on the kids.
Yeah.
But now that Logan's gone, they still sort of have a common enemy in the kids, and we have kids versus corporate, but they're also battling each other. And I thought that was so interesting to see. And it's like, of course they hate Tom. Tom is, like, you know, nepo baby virtue of marrying Shiv, thinks he's one of them. Absolutely is not. So seeing them all sort of come for Tom, who they probably never liked that much, who probably is not very good at his job, who only had a position because of his adjacency to the family, that was great. And then to see them come for each other with Frank and Jerry and Carl all sort of having their reason for why they should ascend to the top of the throne was really interesting. And I thought this was an amazing Frank episode. I thought Frank did such great work in terms of his scene with Kendall, sort of being this father figure towards the end, and also navigating the paper. And what do we do with the paper? Maybe the paper gets flushed down the toilet.
That was great British comedy writing.
I mean, it might get lost. I hope it doesn't. But what if your hand goes a little wobbly and the draft takes it away and it gets flushed down a toilet by mistake? I'm kidding, of course.
No, sure, you're speculating in a comic mode.
Yeah, in a humorous vein.
Mm-hmm. Barry Iannucci, I mean, it's obviously very Jesse Armstrong. That bit was great. I also loved Jerry saying to Carl, I mean, what you did with cable in the 90s, just to be like, you are fucking irrelevant.
You're old. You're old and, like, you don't matter anymore.
And then obviously whatever he did with cable in the 90s, what, you know, was, I'm sure, amazing. And, you know, whatever Rupert Murdoch did to get Fox News to be just de facto on every cable plan in the country, so everyone is paying for Fox News without really knowing it. But Carl maybe has not
done it
seen to much past the I don't know if Carl knows much about the streaming age or whatever.
He's not really, you know, on the front line of the streaming wars, let's say.
But it was good to see everyone bicker because the actors are good at it, the writing is sharp, and it's, you know, fun to remember that they're people. And also, they at least feel secure in either their status at the company going forward, or at least in these, you know, golden parachutes if the Gojo sale happens. Then you have Carrie.
Oh, Carrie.
Who shows up a wreck.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
You're good? Do you need me to help you? Sorry, I don't know if I have your private number. Can you send that to me?
Beautiful piece of acting.
Yes, thank you. Great job, Zoe Winters. Really wonderful work.
And I found myself wondering, and I want to hear what you think, why was she crying? Was she really, did she, like, miss Logan, or was something else going on?
I'm going to go with that she did miss Logan, because who spent the most time with Logan in the recent history? And I think this is a good time to bring up, we got Carrie, we got to bring Marcia back into the picture too, right? Marcia's back. Yes, we love to see her. We love to see her back. Is she lying that she's having these intimate phone calls with Logan? We can't prove that. We don't know. Kendall literally says, what would the phone record say?
Like, right.
We don't know if that's true. But what we do know is that wherever Logan was, Carrie was there. Yeah. So whether or not, you know, they had a perfect relationship or she should have been an ATN news anchor or she's his assistant slash his girlfriend, he was a big part of her life and she was the most constant thing about his life 100%. And when that's ripped away from you, you're going to have an emotional response. And I think she probably did love him because how do you spend that much time with a monster like that and not convince yourself that you are in love with him and that he's going to leave his wife? I mean, that scene, and again, sorry if you don't like musical theater, but it has to be said, that was an Evita, another suitcase in another hall moment to a T.
Really
she
was.
Literally, they give her a bag and they say, get out of the house.
Get leave.
Mistress, you're out. Marcia said, you're not going upstairs. So I have a lot of compassion for her. I hope we see more of her.
Yeah.
But I do think it was a genuine emotional response to Logan leaving.
You're such a sweet, sensitive soul. I don't think it was at all.
My musical theater is showing.
I think she was crying because she was so close to getting rich.
Oh, wow.
And she says, she's kind of muttering, whispering to Roman. She's like, you know, there were supposed to be arrangements.
We were going
to
get married.
Please, like check back. Please, no, let me know. Keep me put. Like, it's basically saying like, no, you don't understand.
Is that why you should just talk?
Like, whatever. Where's the documentation? Where's anything?
Do you think the documents were upstairs and that's why she wanted to go upstairs?
Like, I mean, maybe.
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 I thought she was saying that out of love.
I mean, I'm sure it's complicated. I think it's probably a mix of the two. But I was trying to put myself in the most cynical headspace she could be.
Yes.
And I was like, you know what? If I had to spend time with this like monstrous asshole for like however many months or years, and I came so close to getting my piece of the pie, and then the baker died, I would be like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, I would be bereft.
Bereft.
Because
bereft.
Now what does she do? I guess she can get another high-powered job as some executive assistant elsewhere. She probably has a good resume, good education, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, she came so close to not having to do that again.
$500,000 a year is not $5 million you get just for being, or even $10 billion for being Logan's girlfriend and best friend. And clearly Logan isn't updating his documents.
No.
If the last time he updated them is with pencil 18 months ago or 2 years ago. So there's no way that Carrie is in the will. And Marcia won.
Yeah.
And as much as I like feel for Carrie, because that is, you know, she came so close and yet so far, I'm like not mad that Marcia's back and wielding her power as the, you know, widow.
The grand dame.
The grand dame. Walking around her $63 million apartment.
That's about to be Connor's. And Willa's. Willa was also kind of feeling herself a little bit.
Willa and
episode.
Her mom came
Sylvia,
back.
And I liked the way that Shiv and the kids talked about Sylvia. They were
comedy
like,
oh, manners.
Yeah, they were like, she's just really.
She's really hungry. You can't, around rich people, you can't eat food because that shows that you need something.
Yeah. But Willa was already talking about knocking out walls and whatnot, which I don't think is exactly what Connor wanted. I think he wanted to just put himself inside Logan's castle in order to, I guess, absorb the Logan-ness that he does not innately have.
Yes.
And I think, of course, Petkus being there, this presidential candidate on his way, that's increasingly Connor's domain.
Yeah.
And I know that, is it Jared, right? Yeah, he's a competitor to Connor. But like, as Kendall says, we have to have these relationships.
Yeah. But we haven't talked about the Gojo deal of it all.
Right.
Right? With Mattson and like Lucas and Oscar. Now we have Oscar like on the phone because Lucas can't come to the phone even though he's clearly right off the phone and they're speaking in Swedish about the deal and the kids can hear it over the phone.
Yeah.
But Shiv is like, can you come here? Like he wants them to go and visit
They're having a retreat.
A retreat, company retreat. And Shiv's like, my dad just died. Can you just come over here? And he said no because he now holds the power and he holds more power over them because they're a mess. So I didn't realize the timeline is way more crunched than I think I expected. But we're also moving sort of like day to day to day. Like every episode, like Logan died yesterday.
Right. I'm curious about how the politics, because they're clearly like building toward that. Like the politics of all of this is going to come to bear. They keep mentioning Jared and he hasn't shown up yet this season, but like he will. And I think that like this was, maybe you disagree, but like, I feel like in some senses, this could be the last time that all the kids are somewhat on the same page until the show ends.
Yeah, I don't, I will slightly disagree. I think when they inevitably find out about Shiv's pregnancy, I think they'll all come together probably for that in some way from a familial place.
Right.
But I think professionally, I definitely think that hug was, you know, maybe the end of the road last episode, and that it's the fractures are beginning to show, and they're about to go careening off in different directions. Although it is clear that it's like siblings versus the corporate entity of Frank, Jerry, Carl, and that could keep them maybe slightly more aligned than possible. Because it feels like, I'm going to go Chekhov's gun here, everyone's saying, we all want the Gojo deal. We all want the Gojo deal. Yeah. Everybody wants the Gojo deal to go through. Guess what's not going to go through? Probably.
Well, I think you said it last week, like, and we saw the stock price drop. They're not going to get that same offer.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, I on the phone call with Oscar, was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
There was an eagerness there, and I think that the eagerness on the part of Madsen's team is like, oh, we can get you cheaper. That's why we want to have this happen fast.
Yes.
And they're still, like, in the prime position. No, you have to come here.
Yes.
We're not going to you. We're really sorry to hear about your dad. But, like, anyway, do you want to, like, what's going on?
Yeah. But we have 24 hours, I think, was set on the phone.
I mean, I don't know if, like, how these business logistics work. And is there a set offer? I mean, I assume that can change at any time. I mean, there's not a contract been signed yet or whatever it would be. So, yeah, I think, and Kendall kept talking about, oh, we could, you know, combine ATN and PMG and do that. We've got our own things going on, you know. Mm. I did like when Frank said to Kendall, like, do you really want back in?
Yeah.
And of course he does.
Yeah.
So I think there's a possibility that both the PMG thing and the Gojo thing fall by the wayside and we just get old school Waystar Royco again.
Yeah. Back to ATN just sort of as the primary.
And all of the other ancillary businesses, you know, that Murdoch has sold. But in this fictional world, maybe Waystar Royco remains whole.
That definitely could happen. I think there's one more literal question mark that remains to be seen what happens with that and what that meant. What did Greg question mark on that paper mean? What could that have possibly meant? Why did Logan write down Greg's name on that paper?
That's a great question. That's like a lost style mystery, like a yellow jacket symbol on a tree. You know, maybe it was like, could Greg be a patsy? Or I don't know, maybe there was a point 4 years ago where Logan was looking at his kids and being like, none of these jerks are worthy. And maybe he didn't really, because the timeline of the show has been pretty compressed. Maybe he didn't really even know Greg 4 years ago.
I mean, that's what Roman said.
We kind of see Greg like enter the picture at the beginning of this show.
Yeah.
So maybe he was aware of him and it's his brother's grandson.
His brother's grandson, yes.
Who knows? Are we going to find out more about that? I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, I've been wary, and thank you for sending in predictions. We've gotten a couple predictions that say that Greg is sort of going to emerge as the, you know, the winner of it all by the end. And then there's a theory with, like, the poster. Like, everyone is looking at somebody else on the poster, and Greg is looking at himself.
Right. When Battlestar Galactica did the Last Supper promo thing, and everyone was like, wait.
What does it mean? Yeah, and then there was the plane that actually sort of did foreshadow that Logan would die on a plane. So there definitely are sort of clues in the poster.
Okay.
And I still am rejecting the idea that, like, Greg, the ultimate outsider, comes in and takes over. It feels a little too pat, a little too, like, done before.
Yeah.
But with Greg's name being on the paper and everybody sort of really counting him out and us having so many episodes to go, I'm a little bit more leaning into that sort of theory that Greg might be a dark threat, a dark horse to sort of come through. That being said, he was so, like, he was so nasty this episode. What he was saying about Carrie when she was having
Here come the waterworks. But not realizing that that's not how you talk to Marcia.
No, that's not how you talk to Marcia. That's not how you talk to anybody.
No.
Trying to ingratiate himself and pretend he's this, like, upper class rich.
He's trying to do Tom.
He's trying to do Tom, but Tom is actually better at doing Tom than Greg is doing Tom.
Yeah, yeah.
And we saw, when during Stephen Root's speech, and, like, Tom's making these, like, sort of, like, quips, these funny quips, and Greg's like, yeah, in the shape of a dick. And it's like, that actually isn't a good joke, Greg.
Which I think that's good writing because, like,
it is.
We all know that guy who just, like, doesn't get it and thinks he gets it.
But is always around and, like, can't really. Yeah. He's just sort of around because he's around and you got to put up with him. And he thinks he gets sort of it, but he's never on the mark. That's Greg in a nutshell.
It's funny that I have totally, like, I used to in seasons past be like, oh, everyone's so mean to Greg. Now I'm like, be mean to him. He's an asshole.
He's an asshole. He seems like a terrible person.
Yeah, I mean, they all are.
Yeah.
We should not forget.
This is true. We cannot forget. Still Watching will be back in just a moment. And when we return, crisis communications expert Risa Heller will give her insights.
Yes, like I'm giving fake advice to a fictional family on TV.
Pretty much,
basically, yeah.
What could be better?
And we'll hear your theories about who will take Logan's throne.
The Run for Revogue is where you'll meet all the most exciting people in fashion and culture.
I am Fran Lebowitz. Who should be the mayor of New York?
We all support
that.
Yeah,
we support that.
Very nice.
Nikki.
Yes.
It's been really great being in this beautiful pink room.
All right, Usher, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We can.
We can.
All right, here we are.
On the podcast, you'll learn how Vogue really works.
Sometimes we'll come in for a second or even third run through until we are AWOK.
Can you tell us what AWOK means?
It means AWOK, Anna Wintour OK.
I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel.
And we're the hosts of The Run Through with Vogue, where fashion and culture collide.
Join us. It's AWOK.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You can earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Who do you call when your media empire is in free fall? Well, there are only two words capable of helping you sleep at night. Risa Heller.
Risa Heller is the CEO of Risa Heller Communications and is in the business of crisis communications and reputation management. Her clients are very powerful people that would probably rub elbows with the Roys if they weren't fictional.
She's worked with Airbnb, WeWork, and many Fortune 500 companies and individuals, ranging from Anthony Weiner and Ivanka Trump to Mario Batali and ousted CNN head Jeff Zucker. Risa is also a massive Succession fan, ready to talk about the Roy family's PR crisis. She's only seen through episode 3, so we didn't spoil anything in 4 for her, but she had a lot of interesting things to say in a general sense about where the Roys find themselves at this moment. Risa, thank you so much for talking with us. I have to ask, how did you react to Logan Roy's death?
Succession shoots right around my office, and so we sort of knew this was happening because we saw some scene where the kids were yelling about it, like when they were shooting, which is just totally weird and random and funny. But I thought the episode was incredible. You know, I always get very fascinated on the show because I'm a PR person when they have like a PR element to it. And so that always has me like very wide-eyed and kind of giggling.
Speaking of that PR element, the PR moves start to be made like sort of immediately after Logan's death. Is that like true to life? Like how would you have handled the immediate aftermath of Logan dying?
Oh, well, first of all, it actually is totally true to life, especially if you're the CEO of it's a publicly traded company. So like that is actually true to life. I thought it was very funny because they sort of sat around in the plane and were like, oh, yeah, we're just going to do this if it goes south, even though, like, you knew that it was going south. And they kept telling the kids, like, oh, this is just like a contingency plan. We're doing the statement. So they would absolutely have to do something, like, pretty immediately. And you saw also in the show that, like, something had leaked to a reporter, like a reporter had called about it. And then they also had this other crazy thing, which I thought was sort of interesting, which was, like, this notion of the wedding that was being covered by reporters. Like, the thing that I didn't understand is, like, when all the three siblings were, like, sobbing on the boat and then leaving. So, like, the notion that all these reporters on, like, I sat there being like, oh, the reporters on the boat are going to know what's happening. Mm. But the reporters on the boat did not know what was happening, which I thought was very strange.
They distracted them. What do you think the most important thing for the company or the board or whatever would be to communicate in these immediate moments? Is it we're all stable, everything's fine? Like what's the most immediate message that needs to be sent?
What is the name of the show?
Oh, Six, right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Totally. Like, that's what they have to do. I mean, they set it up in kind of a fun way where it's clear, like, one of the guys, I can't remember which of the older, it wasn't Jerry, but one of the other two guys who I confuse who's who, one is Carl and one is...
Frank or Carl.
Yeah, Frank or Carl was like, you know, it's very crucial that we get mentioned. Like, the whole thing that you have to convey in a situation like this, even if there was not an acquisition and a sale and all of these things, would be like, the company is going to be fine and it's in good hands and here's the plan. Mm. And so you saw Carl and whoever and Jerry being like, we need to be mentioned in this statement.
Mm.
And the kids were like, no, we're writing the statement, which is kind of interesting. So the key thing that they have to show is that the company is in good hands, is not going to fall apart. And that, I assume, is what the whole rest of the season and series yeah. will be. Like the kids fighting against the board. It has to be.
That's really interesting. And I guess my question is, if you don't know what's going to happen with the company, how do you spin that in a PR way? Because they don't know who's going to, you know, we don't know if it's in good hands because we don't know who the hands of the company, who's going to hold the company soon.
Totally. Like what they really should have done, I think, was basically said, first of all, a company, typically these big companies have, like not if this guy dies on a plane accidentally, here's what we're going to do, but they have, it's set up in a much more kind of scaffolded way and there's much more structure. They would have to either say, like, immediately, like, here's who's running the company in the interim, and or we're going to announce the new governance structure tomorrow, or something like that. Like, that's the thing that's going to get very sticky. And then the other thing that I thought was weird, this is such, like, an insider kind of loserish PR thing to think, but when the kids came to the little private airport and, like, came into the terminal... Yeah. And met the media, and then she read that little card with mm-hmm. the thing. Like, that to me was an insane thing to do.
Why?
Because first of all, who, like, just practically, if you're a human and your parent dies, who wants to go stand in front of 20 cameras and microphones to be like, our father died, we're very sad. Leave us, like, it's a very weird thing to do, number one. Number two, there was no need for them to actually do that. They could have just put out a statement. And they were like, all of the action between the siblings was in the sight line of the cameras and the reporters. Like, it was all glass. So it just struck me as, like, a very strange thing to do. It's a situation where you could easily put out a written statement. But again, this is such, like, an insider comms.
No, but I think this is a show that, you know, is trying at least to give the uninitiated a glimpse into this world. And on the whole, you know, over the course of these three and a half seasons, how accurate do you think the show gets this world? I mean, obviously there's a lot of communication stuff involved, but you also have, you know, you work with these big companies a lot. Like, do they get it mostly right, or how do you fall on that?
I would say not really.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, there was something that happened, you know, they don't necessarily handle it in the way that I think if you were being really smart about communications that you would handle it. Like, there was, like, that thing about the New York Magazine story. Or there was a hilarious thing when, like, the crisis comms girls came in to help Kendall. When was that? Where he was sitting in his wife's apartment.
That was, like, beginning of last season, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, they were I just remember sitting and watching that and cracking up. Because I thought, like, this is not true to how life is. He was just, like, screaming about Twitter, I think. Yes. And I think it's, like, an impression that people have about how things go. But it's really kind of not how things go. You know, it's not that interesting to, like, watch someone, like, very thoughtfully write a statement.
Right. You can't really show that at the Emmys.
Yeah, you can't. You definitely can't show that at the Emmys. So it's like, and there's a lot less media coverage, actually, than there would, like, if Rupert Murdoch gets written about constantly. Mm. Like, you don't really see that in the show.
Right. I guess you don't always get enough of an impression that these people are very famous, or at least Logan is very famous.
Totally. And, like, yeah, that you get the sense that he's, like, you know, got a lot of people around him and blah, blah, blah. And maybe it's too complicated, but I'm surprised that even though he is the media, there is not more of a media overlay in the show.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's, you know, as you guys know, there are many media reporters. They fascinate over these things endlessly because they're interesting. And the media likes covering the media.
Perhaps more than anything else.
Yeah, that's very true. That's...
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. So, like, you sort of see it, like, when Kendall gives a news conference and it's, like, a very full room, like the one where he kind of shed on his father last year. But it's interesting to me that there's not, like, a much more of, like, a tension about, like, this guy's calling, he knows X, blah, blah, blah.
In terms of the way the PR crises have been handled and, like, and the PR people. We've got Carolina, you mentioned Kendall's like crisis team just now. What like grade would you give them in terms of like, are they doing A work, B work, C work? Like,
Good question. I really like Carolina because I feel like she's just like, she's just there to like do her job and is like not interested in the drama and she's just like doing the thing. I'd give her an A.
I like that. I like Carolina. We Carolina on this podcast.
We do.
You do. Yeah. Okay, good. The crisis gals, I don't think they merit a grade because they were only in like one episode.
And I think that it's part of the joke that like
totally
Kendall hired these hired the
worst
wrong people. Yeah, yeah.
Of course, and he's just screaming at them about his Twitter, which is just the funniest thing.
So looking at where the kind of pieces are arrayed on the board now that Logan is gone, do you see like, is Carrie like the biggest liability for this smooth transition? Is it one of the siblings? Like, who would you be most worried about were you in those rooms?
Well, first of all, the family is they're all a huge liability. Yeah. But like, the question is whose call is it?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a question about like all the machinations around the war of the shares and who's got what and what it means. I think Carrie is, first of all, Carrie is fucked. Not from a PR perspective, just from the show perspective, because everyone hates her and finds her to be a nuisance and a hassle. She probably provides a huge amount of PR risk for them. But I'm not sure it really matters if Logan is dead and that's sort of like the leverage she had. Mm. So then the question is, like, it's a bit of a mess. And all the kids have problems PR-wise. Like, I think there's some scenario where Shiv and Wamskags, whatever his name is, get back together.
Sure.
Wow.
Because the thing they're at war over is gone. Mm. If she could become the CEO, he'd be willing to put up with that, I would think.
What, on that note, given what could potentially happen, what would you tell them to do? What would your professional advice be in this scenario, in this situation?
Here's the thing. I would tell them to do exactly what they will be unable to do, which is come up with a way to do a very orderly transition that makes the company look like it is in the best possible hands and aggressively communicate about it. You know, like sometimes you have a problem and sometimes you have a PR problem. Mm. This is a problem.
Right.
But not only do they have to like solve for that, they have to over communicate it to give faith to the marketplace, which is a really hard thing to do. And it's especially hard if everyone involved in it is like the biggest mess in the world.
Is the best course of action to not give it to one of the kids then, do you think? Is it like Jerry, which should just do it or something like that?
It's tough because you sort of, I mean, none of those kids would be a visionary leader. Neither would Jerry and the two.
Right. We haven't really met a visionary yet. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no visionaries yet. But it seems to me like that's the whole thing. It's like going to be three against three. And what's going to happen? Right? I mean, what do you guys think? It seems to me that Shiv would be the most mercenarial and even.
I've been saying Shiv. That's who I've been rooting for, if that's even the right term to use.
Like, Roman is a lunatic, and Kendall is, no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess you probably have to have a little lunacy to, like, exist in such a high, you know, high altitude. But, yeah, I think Shiv is probably the most rational. But, you know, then you get into questions about, like, gender politics and sexism in this, you know, the business world and just the world in general.
Yeah, but I think that they would probably, I mean, this is, like, too meta to even discuss. Like, okay, so what does that mean and what would they do with it? They could say, just, like, from a governance perspective, like, Jerry or one of the other two is running it in the interim and we're going to put a process together to figure out who's going to run it. I don't think it's a good idea from a PR perspective because it will make everything seem very shaky. Like the thing that you, from a comms perspective that they need to convey is like a steady hand.
Which these people are very bad at.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. So like the one thing they need to do is project a steady hand. They will not be able to do that because all the hands are very shaky.
We see in episode 3 that the stock price, you know, plummets or drops significantly in the news of the death. Is that the kind of thing that these companies can bounce back from, or is that like sort of setting a new level for at least?
No, they can bounce back if it's just like a short thing.
It's just a dip.
Yes, it's just a dip, but you have to get someone. That's why you have to like turn it quick. And that's why doing something that demonstrates or illustrates uncertainty looks really bad and will be terrible for the stock price and terrible for the company.
So one thing we do on this show pretty much every week is try to predict who, I mean, you know, we're not holding ourselves that closely to these predictions, but.
Okay, good. Like, as long as there's no accountability.
None whatsoever.
We won't be checking back with you to correct you. We try to predict who's going to come out on top at the end. So based on what you've seen of this season thus far, Risa, who would you say, not a favorite necessarily, but like most practically in the show's world, do you think is going to win in the end?
Shiv.
Mm. Yeah. Why?
I think she will stop at nothing to succeed. She's kind of smarter than her brothers and more even keeled. It's hard for me to see how after all of this and the show being about succession, how Jerry or the two other guys could end up on top.
Fair.
Kendall has like way too many demons, problems, issues, including the murder.
Oh, right. Yeah, the murder. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, don't forget about the murder, guys. You can't be the CEO of a publicly traded company if you're a killer. You literally can't. And Roman is deranged. Mm.
That's a really strong. I've been saying mostly, I've been bopping between Shiv and Jerry week to week.
How could Jerry?
She's, if there's one person who's more shrewd and maybe more competent than Shiv, it's Jerry, I would say.
That's true, but do we need to mention her hat? Or we should just let that one go.
We did unpack her hat.
Yeah.
Phew, that seems important.
We were saying it's half Little Fascinator from a Royal Wedding and half Kentucky Derby. It's just some sort of weird middle size between those things.
Very middle size, very weird placement, very bad angle, very confusing.
Very bad angle, very confusing. Oh, that's so...
Yeah, my theory has always been that Kendall... Well, not always. Of late, it has been that Kendall just becomes his father and becomes sort of like, you know, walls off emotion and just charges forward and... You know, Logan's spirit inhabits him, basically. But I like a Shiv ending better.
But he can't really handle that.
Yeah.
He's emotionally unable to handle that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not sustainable. He could do it for a little bit, maybe. But
yes. Yeah, but then he would really end up... I mean, he's very on the edge.
Could definitely burn out, flame out in a spectacular fashion, yeah. I would say.
Yeah, like next week.
We shall see. In the meantime, Risa, thank you. We won't hold you to any of those predictions.
Okay, good.
But we really do appreciate your expertise. And we also hope that you won't have to deal with anything like this anytime soon.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. Very fun. Bye.
Still Watching will be back in just a moment. And when we return, we'll open up the listener mailbag.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Before we go, we have some listener emails that we wanted to read.
Thank you for sending in emails. We really appreciate it, and it really makes us think in different ways. Okay, so a listener named Audrey was sort of on my wavelength, so I'll start with Audrey. And she says, my prediction is that Shiv will ascend as either the head of Royco or Pierce, but will have to further sacrifice her morals to do so by backstabbing Jerry and or endorsing Mencken.
Oh, that's a great theory. A Mencken endorsement would be like... completely just ripping her soul out of her body.
I honestly don't think, and maybe again I'm naive, and clearly I've emerged as the bleeding heart of this podcast. I don't think that Shiv would be able to do that morally. I think she would have to draw a line. She would not even let him come in the house. I mean, I think he might be eventually coming into the apartment. But I feel like she would not be able to do that, morally speaking.
Well, we'll see how cynical and dark the show wants to get.
Yeah, which probably is darker than I'm willing to admit. Okay, so back to the Cousin Greg theory. So Roberta and another one, Hunter, they both said Cousin Greg. One of the emails said, my prediction is that the emergent king is Cousin Greg, possibly with his new IG girlfriend as queen. I think they're going to get married. From the beginning, I thought he's the one who's going to take over. He's ruthless about getting what he wants.
Not wrong. You know, and actually maybe there's a benefit to the Jerrys and the Franks of the world to have this buffoon that they can easily control, you know, because the election of Roman and Kendall, that's temporary. That's the understanding.
It's interim.
It's just to get them through this potential sale to Gojo so everyone can get their riches and the shareholders will be happy. But that doesn't mean that they're supposed to run the company forever. I mean, obviously, that's what they want.
Yeah.
But maybe other people on the board see it a different way. And maybe Greg is like, here's a puppet who's like probably not shrewd enough to like, you know, turn the tables on the people who voted him in.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he would just kind of stay loyal forever.
Yeah, I think that's a good argument. I was really not hot on the Greg theory.
Yeah.
Last episode. And now I'm like, it's gaining a little bit of steam to me, a little bit of traction.
His name was on that paper for a reason, narratively speaking.
Yes.
We may never find out exactly what Logan meant by that, but like the writers of the show have now thrown him into that pond.
Yes. He's decidedly in the ring, maybe even more so than Tom now, because his name is on that paper.
Yeah.
Speaking of Greg, Bina emailed and said, we can't forget about Logan's brother, right? Because he's still kicking. And like, how might that affect the company and the will and whatnot? Because we still haven't really done anything with the will, right?
No, we don't know actually what the official will was. I'm assuming there will be an episode of will reading, but who knows? I should also say, listeners, this is as far as I've seen. I haven't seen anything past this. So for the rest of the season, we're both flying relatively blind.
By the seat of our pants.
Yeah.
And then we have Leandro from Brazil. Thank you for emailing. Leandro says, my bet is that Sandy and Stewie are going to be able to arrange a deal with Mattson and the board to acquire the company for way less than previously agreed on with Logan. The kids are going to be forced to sell to make good on the promise to buy PGM, and eventually they will end up with neither companies due to legal details, leaving them with only the cable network, which sounds kind of similar to what you have posited before.
Or they just go full evil and just run this conservative, you know, nation, if not planned at destroying network. I could see that. I do think that the kids are going to lose something big. I don't know what that thing is yet.
Yeah.
But something is going to go away. But I think they'll still maintain something else. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's hard.
I think the PMG thing like was spoken about in this episode, but it feels like that's maybe sort of drifting away.
Yeah. But I mean, even with what, you know, Stewie said, being like, that deal is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And Kendall was not like, no.
Right, exactly. Well, thank you for all those people for writing in. Please keep the emails coming.
Yes,
we are at stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. Well, that does it for this episode of Still Watching. Please, once again, send us your questions, concerns, feelings of injustice, theories, whatever you have in your head at stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. Or you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Rylaws, R-I-L-A-W-S.
And you can find me on Twitter at Christress, C-H-R-I-S-T-R-E-S-S.
This has been Still Watching from Vanity Fair. Our producer is Emily Elias, and we had production help from Peyton Hayes. We had technical assistance from Gabe Quiroga. Stephen Valentino is our executive producer, and our theme music is by Alexis Quadrado. We'll be back next week for episode 5. Looking forward to seeing you then.
He was a man of humility, grace, dignity.
Who died fishing his iPhone from a clogged toilet.
In public.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR. From PR.